So it doesn't matter, says Krishna, under whose name they're worshipped. The object is to activate them within oneself and move away from... it's almost like an addiction. Move away from the addiction to the come hitherness of the things in the external world. No matter how appealing, no matter how incredible, no matter how many people tell you how cool it would be if you got there, it's all going to end in death. So the only things worth striving for are the things that, in effect, you can take with you. And all you can take with you is what you've learned. And all that you've learned has to be at the expense of the world. Although the world has things to teach us, but very little about Krishna, although he's omnipresent. So we actually can learn about Krishna if our discernment's correct, but it isn't, because he says in the Bhagavad Gita, with your two eyes you cannot, to Arjuna, his pupil, he says, with your two eyes you cannot see me, so I'll lend you the eye of discernment so you can. And that's the eye, going back to the eye of Shiva. So Krishna lends Arjuna the eye of discernment, and all of a sudden Arjuna is seeing every, literally, so to speak, everything all at once. The entire universe, every plane of the universe, the physical being the least of it, he's seeing the whole thing all at once through the eye of Krishna, and it's absolutely overwhelming to him. And he says, please stop. You know, go back to your normal forearm form. Most of us couldn't handle a forearm form, let alone the cosmic vision of the universe. And it's said that Krishna allowed Arjuna this vision because of Arjuna's supreme devotion. But he says, Krishna gives everybody something. Even if it's the object of a not very happy desire, they'll get it. Because we live in a beneficent universe. Nature's, he says, human beings often mistake the boundlessness of nature. They often mistake that and misuse that for their own purposes. Whereas they should be using it as a reflection of the boundlessness of Krishna himself and be tuning themselves in to the eternal picture. Yeah. So the message of the Gita, it says here, I'll read there's one line here that's pretty interesting. It says, we might say that the message and meaning of the incarnation of Krishna over 5,075 years ago was to bring into the lives of men the beauty, the vital relevance, and the abundant hope of the eternal rhythm of the cosmos. Beauty, relevance, abundant hope of the eternal rhythm of the cosmos. It's also said that we have within our nature, if we can light it up. They use images like this, like light up the flame in the heart, that will light up the mind. That within every human being there's incredible potential for creativity. not just in the ordinary sense of the word creativity, but like spiritual creativity. And there's a discussion that we won't go into, but the basic essence of which is that the force behind spiritual creativity is universal, and it is such that in multiplying itself, it doesn't become less. In multiplying itself, it doesn't become less. And it says if a person can grasp at some level that idea and apply it to themselves, then the opportunities for spiritual creativity within oneself become virtually boundless. But this involves spiritual creativity, it said, involves releasing the quote-unquote spiritual will as opposed to the personal will, of the spiritual will, which it says is a direct ray of the highest light and is therefore universal, like the highest light, and cannot actually be tapped for personal purposes. It can only be tapped by minds that are absolutely pure. But that spiritual will, tapped by minds that are perfectly pure, can be brought down from more abstract planes onto this one for the good of mankind, which is precisely what spiritual beings are doing. I mean, the real ones. Like, I just finished reading about a woman, some of you may have heard of her, named Anandamaya Ma. Anandamaya Ma. She was born in 1896. It was observed in her first few days of birth that she was noticing everything going on around her. She was having visions by the age of one. She was declared fully enlightened at the age of 20. She never had a teacher. She never read a spiritual text. She is quoting long verses out of Sanskrit works at the age of 12. She'd never seen any Sanskrit works. People started coming to see her. She's an exemplification in our own time of what it is to become one with Krishna. She's somehow born that way. She too reduces it all to light, capital L, light, and compassion. And she too says, as Krishna does, whatever path seems to suit you, follow that path. So the fruit of Krishna is difficult to hear. There's some people apparently who are born with an ear for it, and they're probably the ones, like this woman I just mentioned, or others who just get onto it kind of right from the gate and don't waste time, don't waste 30 or 40 years finding out what it isn't or where it isn't.